All right, good morning. Thank you all for being here today. I'm very excited to present in a different section. I'm a forward agronomist, so I'm usually at C6. So today I will be sharing with you a portion of a project that we are nearing completion on that we've been conducting in South Africa. And I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators who are really the people that are doing a lot of this work. So Joseph Asiwe is a cowpea breeder and pulse legume crop expert at University of Limpopo in South Africa. And Dr. B.V. Singh is a visiting scientist with Texas A&M University, and he's been breeding cowpea for quite some time. And also Randall Bowe, who did live on the farm during our breeding and research efforts with cowpea there in South Africa, and instrumental to the success of the project. So worldwide, cowpea, which originated in southern Africa, is really the most important food legume there in Africa. About 80% of the world cowpea production does occur in Africa. You can imagine that it's very well adapted to the area, and that's why. There's about 14 million hectares per year of cowpea that's produced, grown on 14 million hectares per year, which produces about 7 million tons per year of cowpea. The reason that it's so important is because it's a wonderful protein source. It's about 25% crude protein in the grain and also in the young leaves, which can be used for salad or stew. If you've ever had cooked spinach, it would be similar to that. And then 16% protein in the haulms. And so this is important because most people on a smallholder farm are not just growing cowpea for the pulse crop or for the young leaves for human consumption, but they're harvesting those things for human consumption and then they're feeding animals also. So it's a dual purpose crop. It's also very vitamin and mineral rich. So a lot of the minerals that have been identified as key to food insecurity in Africa can be met with cowpea. It's also very antioxidant rich, and we also have Joseph Awika on the team, who is a food scientist that studies tannins and other antioxidants. And there are several lines of cowpea that are very high in antioxidants. There are about 50 regional and local dishes in Africa that are based on cowpea. I'm from Texas, so every year on New Year's Eve, my mom makes ham and rice and black-eyed peas. And black-eyed peas in the southern United States symbolize good luck for you to have a lucky year. And cabbage is thrown into the mix there, too. So while much of the United States might not rely on black-eyed peas or cowpea, it is very important in the South where I'm from. So I do have a photo here that I have not explained. So B.B. Singh, he has a book available through the societies that is just titled Cowpea. He worked for IITA for many years in Nigeria, and while he was in Nigeria, he had the opportunity to work on different intercropping projects with the cowpea lines that he bred, and this was a photo that he was able to take during his time in Nigeria, where he was able to help communities improve their crop production. And this picture demonstrates the wide variety in the germplasm available. So on the right here, you have your traditional black-eyed pea, but you might also have a brown-colored bean with a white spot in the eye. So it is a wide variation in what's available to us for breeding purposes. So I've talked to you a little bit about worldwide and Africa in general, but South Africa specifically is a very minor producer of cowpea. There's a lot of reasons for that, but primarily it's cultural. It's considered a poor man's crop, and so it's primarily grown for smallholder farmers in the rural areas. There is a lack of improved seeds. There's lots of diseases and weeds such as Striga, Electra, bacterial blight that cowpea might be susceptible to. And there's very limited production inputs on these smallholder farms. The crop focus on larger farms is primarily on monocots, maize, sorghum, millet. And when they do plant on a smallholder farm, it's a very low plant density, which then allows for weed pressure. And also nutrient loss from the soil each year. It's estimated in this system that you're losing about 26 kilograms per hectare nitrogen, 3 kilograms per hectare phosphorus, and 19 kilograms of potassium each year. So what is happening is there is a decrease in soil organic matter, increased weed pressure, reduced soil biological diversity, and an increase in soil erosion. And that's a problem because soil is the basis of all our crop production. So our idea was that an improved cowpea cultivar might increase plant density, increase food production, soil organic matter, and reduce soil erosion. So if we could add a legume that's going to fix nitrogen and help add some of that back to the system into the monocot reliant system, we could make some improvements. In addition, the cowpea lines that were bred to be very tolerant to low soil phosphorus environment. Also, they're tolerant to aphid, they're resistant to aphids, which is a problem, and bacterial blight, which has been a big problem, especially with dry bean production in the region. And in addition to those traits, it was bred to be a very short duration crop. So, as you might know, soybean is about 120 days to maturity, to harvest. These cowpea lines are 60 to 65 day maturity. So in other words, it takes less time and input in order to grow the cowpea crop versus soybean, which it would be perhaps an alternative legume crop. So these are just additional pictures that B.B. Singh provided me with of his work in Nigeria. So the picture on the top is with a community leader, of which he had to get permission from and a working relationship with in order to work in the communities that he served while in Nigeria. So overall, for this experiment that I'm presenting today, our goal was to evaluate some of these improved cowpea lines for their tolerance in the real-world application for drought and low phosphorus tolerance, and to identify the lines which did have potential to enhance food crop production in sub-Saharan Africa. So overall, this is part of a larger project, and the evaluation of dry bean, soybean, and even sorghum was included in our overall project. We did look at management practices, including planting date, cultivars, and crop rotation of grain legumes and cereals, and which might improve yield by reduction of soil-borne pathogenic organisms. We worked with colleagues at the University of the Free State for this work. Again, as I said, this isn't necessarily a common crop any longer in South Africa. After apartheid and redistribution of land, there has been a shift away from historical cultural practices. We also wanted to identify the primary biotic stresses associated with cowpea, dry bean, and soybean, with an emphasis on root health. So we worked on Ukulima Farm, which is located in northeastern South Africa, in between very small towns of Alma and Motamole in the Limpopo province. This farm is owned by the Howard Buffett Foundation, and they did fund the research. There we're operating on a sandy loam soil type with a pH of 5.5, and I've let you know the Bray index for phosphorus and potassium. So not necessarily limiting, but still low in these soils. We had a completely randomized block design for our cowpea varieties, and we used four rows, and we measured from the two innermost rows and a 75 centimeter row spacing. So a little bit wider than normal, which might reflect what someone would be able to accomplish in a real world smallholder farm setting. So again, these varieties have an early maturity, about 60 days, low soil phosphorus tolerance, Strigon aphid resistance. And we did also learn, even though they weren't bred for the bacterial blight resistance that I mentioned, that they are bacterial blight resistant. So these varieties were from the breeding program of B.B. Singh. He began breeding at IITA, and then this continued with his work in India and with us at Texas A&M University. And then also we included lines that were inherent to South Africa, and then those developed by Joseph Asiwe at the University of Limpopo when he worked for the ARC, the Ag Research Council, which would be similar to our ARS system here in the United States. We did use local types, including Glinda. Glinda was our primary check for to compare to South African local cultivars. We did use chemical inputs. The idea was that could this be applicable to both a small holder or a medium or large farm? We began in 2012 with 97 improved cowpea varieties. And as I mentioned, I'm a forage agronomist. I had no idea there were this many cowpea lines. It was very impressive. We did grow at 5 locations in Texas as well, and we identified lines that might benefit us here in the United States. So for the first year of the 97 lines, we include 37 early maturity, which is about 60 days from the United States, about 20 from South Africa, 20 medium maturity, which would be 75 to 80 days maturity from the United States, and then another 20 medium maturity from South Africa. So from the data, we looked at resistance to aphid and other diseases, including bacterial blight, and we also looked at the yield of the grain and the yield of the fodder, because we wanted this to apply for a dual purpose crop. So from the first round, we identified 40 breeding lines that we could move forward, and then we narrowed that down in year 3 to the final 8. And statistical analysis along the way was done with Statistics 10.0. So this year, I will be leaving on December 12th to do our final year of planting, and we're going to focus on the 8 improved varieties for another year, our check controls, and then our intercropping study, which I'm not presenting today. So from year 1, we had 97 lines, and you can see Glenda here in the middle bar. The grain yield here is presented on the y-axis, and then the number of genotypes is presented here. So grain yield above Glenda was about 53 lines. So we did have quite a bit of our initial 97 that outproduced our in-country check, which was Glenda. And we use Glenda because it is available through seed company sources and also through local distribution channels, I mean farmer-to-farmer sharing. So it's widely planted in South Africa where it is planted. So as far as fodder yield goes, because we did care about both our grain and fodder production, you can see that here we only had 17 lines that were greater than Glenda. However, 3,000 kilograms per hectare is pretty high production rate already as far as fodder production would go. Okay, so these are our final, our shining stars, the ones that we're going to be moving forward. Just to share a little data, we have the production per year here, and this is kilograms per hectare grain production. The crude protein of the grain is all very high. It's higher than average. We have aphid resistance in 4 lines, bacterial blight resistance in 4, and we have drought tolerance in another 4. These are some photos. This photo here in the bottom left shows the bacterial blight. I just want to really point that out. So dry bean is not necessarily bred for bacterial blight resistance, and so dry bean might look like this, but this is a cowpea line that was not resistant. So we have 2 lines from Texas breeding programs that are going to be released on a humanitarian license because these had resistance and greater yields than in-country check. And we are moving forward with seed increase and distribution through local channels. And they're resistant to aphid in this photo, but you can see some aphid damage on the pod here. So we hope to integrate this into South Africa. We need to get women farmers involved and extension of the research and find food products that aren't just for the poor man. So we hope to move forward. And do I have time for questions? Okay.
Thank you. We have time for 1 or 2 questions.
Okay, I never know if that's good or bad. Yes, sir.
So one of your goals was to identify genotypes adapted to low phosphorus?
Yes.
And then you did have a high phosphorus site?
Yes, okay, so I will explain that. These were lines that were bred, again, with Texas A&M and University of Limpopo. So to supplement this work, we had 5 locations in Texas that were field studies, and also greenhouse and other work in the lab through BB Sink's program in College Station. So there was a greenhouse trial to supplement this where we had soil with different phosphorus levels. So it wasn't in the field tested because we didn't have access to a site with low phosphorus, but it was verified as part of the breeding efforts. Is that? Any other questions? Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.